From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network.
Dr. Jean-Laurent Casanova, professor of medicine and head of the Laboratory of Human Genetics of Infectious Diseases at the Rockefeller University, is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about a paradigm shift in understanding infectious disease in children.
Dr. Jean-Laurent Casanova is professor of medicine and head of the Laboratory of Human Genetics of Infectious Diseases at the Rockefeller University in New York. He also is editor-in-chief of a new peer-reviewed journal, Inborn Errors of Immunity, that will premiere next year, published by Marianne Liebert, Inc. Dr. Casanova studies the genetics of human predisposition to pediatric infectious diseases, particularly mycobacterial diseases, invasive pneumococcal diseases, and herpes simplex encephalitis. He is interested in identifying Mendelian holes in the immune defense of otherwise healthy children who are susceptible to specific infectious diseases. Dr. Casanova, you have written that infectious diseases are the one group of human disorders commonly thought to be essentially environmental. However, you note that research on the human genetics of infectious diseases has demonstrated that infectious diseases are also genetic, perhaps even more so than any other group of human diseases. What is the evidence for your statement?
Well, there's two lines of evidence. The first line of evidence is epidemiological. In the 20th century, in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, there have been beautiful studies, beautiful genetic epidemiological studies that can be broken down into three groups that have provided the first evidence. So there were what we call aggregation studies or correlation studies, there were twin studies, and there were adoptive studies. Correlation studies noted that infectious diseases tended to be more common in certain families or certain ethnic groups than others, suggesting that there was an inherited predisposition in some families or kindreds or populations. Now, it's only indirect and relatively weak evidence, because you can argue that the reason why it's common in some families is because it's contagious, and it's more common to, you know, and that explains the aggregation and the correlation in some kindreds. Now, the second evidence was the adoptive studies, and that's much stronger. Here, what the investigators did was to compare infectious diseases, in particular death of infection, in children compared with their biological parents and their foster parents. They share the genetic background with the biological parents, and they share the environment with the foster parents. And it is clear from these studies that death of infection is clearly and strongly correlated with death of infection of the biological parents, not the foster parents. And more so than any human disease, more than cancer, more than cardiovascular disease. There's in particular a beautiful comprehensive study that was published a few decades later in the 80s in the New England Journal of Medicine. The first author is Sorensen, and I strongly encourage you and anyone to read this paper. So it's been shown by adoptive studies. And then the third epidemiological line of evidence is derived from the twin studies. These are comparison of the concordance rate of diseases, infectious diseases in particular, in identical twins versus fraternal twins, that is, monozygotic twins versus dizygotic twins. And again, for most infectious diseases studied, as early as in the 30s, people showed that the concordance rate was much higher in monozygotic identical twin pairs than in fraternal dizygotic twin pairs. For example, with tuberculosis, the concordance rate in identical twins is about 80%, 80-85%, whereas in fraternal dizygotic twins, is 20-25%. So there is a genetic component for infectious diseases, and that was already established by genetic epidemiological studies. Now, the second group of evidence is the molecular and cellular evidence, and that's a long story that began in the 50s. From the 1950s onwards, there have been molecular and cellular studies that provided compelling evidence that at least in some patients, some infectious diseases had a strong genetic component.
The view that has dominated the infectious disease field over the last 50 years holds that rare monogenic immunodeficiencies confer vulnerability to multiple infectious diseases, one gene, multiple infections, whereas common infections are associated with the polygenic inheritance of multiple susceptibility genes, one infection, multiple genes. You've developed a theory that you believe has transformed this perception of human infectious diseases. Tell us about your novel theory, which involves what you call a new group of primary immunodeficiencies.
So the background, as you stated, is that from the early 50s onward, two fields have developed. The field of primary immunodeficiency, a group of about 300 diseases, typically rare monogenic traits that confer predisposition to multiple infectious diseases, typically a group of pediatric illnesses. That's one field. And then the other field is the field of complex genetics of infectious diseases, such as malaria or TB or other common infections. And here, the idea is that genetic predisposition does not result from monogenic lesions, but rather from a polygenic inheritance, from multiple genetic lesions, each of which has only a small, modest impact, and the combination of which predisposes the genetically predisposed individual to develop the disease. So for primary immunodeficiency, the common paradigm is one genetic lesion, one rare genetic lesion predisposes to multiple infectious diseases, whereas in the field of complex genetics of infectious diseases, the paradigm is that one common infection reflects the inheritance of multiple genetic lesions. So you have one gene, multiple infections on the one hand, and one infection, multiple genetic lesions on the other. Now, what we've proposed and what we've documented in some patients for some infectious diseases is that there are genetic lesions that predispose affected patients to one infection. It's one gene, one infection. And with my colleague Laurent Abel, we've documented examples in individual patients. We refer to them as novel primary immunodeficiencies. For example, children with specific mutations in the TOL3 interferon pathway are vulnerable to herpes simplex encephalitis. Children with specific mutations in the TLR, RAC4, MYD88 pathway are vulnerable to invasive pneumococcal disease. Children with mutations in the IL-12 gamma interferon circuit are vulnerable to mycobacterial disease, and there are other examples. So at the individual level, there are novel primary immunodeficiencies that predispose otherwise healthy, normally resistant individuals to develop one infectious disease. But with Laurent Abel, we've also identified major genes that, again, not at the individual, but at the population level, predispose some groups, some populations to the development of one infectious disease. Laurent Abel with Alain de Saint has mapped a chromosomal region that predisposes to the development of schistosomiasis. Together with Erwin Schur and Alexandre Alcaiz, he has mapped and cloned the first genes that predispose to the development of leprosy and its clinical forms, again at the population level. And he has also mapped, again with Erwin Schur, the first tuberculosis susceptibility locus. So both at the individual level and at the population level, there are no examples of genes that predispose to one infection.
How specifically does this novel causal relationship, one gene, one infection, blur the distinction between patient-based Mendelian genetics and population-based complex genetics? And describe how it provides a unified conceptual framework for exploring the molecular genetic basis of infectious diseases in humans.
Well, these discoveries bridge two fields that were hitherto separated, the field of primary immunodeficiencies on one hand, and the field of complex genetics of common infectious diseases on the other, were completely distinct fields. They had distinct intellectual roots. They were led by people belonging to completely distinct societies. The dominant paradigms in these two fields were distinct. The field of primary immunodeficiency is a field led by Mendelian geneticists, by physician scientists, people interested in the impact of genes on their patients, whereas the field of complex genetics is led by population geneticists, quantitative Galtonian geneticists, people interested in the impact of genes on populations, the two fields had separate, you know, they had separate journals, they had separate meetings. They really had a look the genetic component of infectious diseases that was completely different, completely distinct. The person who founded the field of primary immunodeficiency was Ogden Bruton, and not surprisingly, he was a pediatrician in the American Army. He was really a physician scientist. The person who founded the field of complex genetics of infectious diseases is a British population geneticist, Tony Allison. The intellectual roots, the society has differed. Now, with the types of predisposition that with Laurent Bell we've described, one gene, one infection, I think we've bridged these hitherto separated fields.
What are Mendelian holes?
Well, a Mendelian hole is a monogenic lesion affecting host defense and resulting in a specific hole in immune responses itself, resulting in predisposition to one infectious disease.
You've noted that revealing Mendelian holes in the immune defense of otherwise healthy individuals has profound clinical implications. Can you elaborate?
Well, if infectious diseases are not only infectious but also genetic traits, Mendelian traits in particular, with a causal relationship between the genetic lesion and the development of the infectious disease, well, then we know what's the missing piece or what's the altered piece in the engine, and we can not only treat patients with antibiotics, but also treat them by replacing the missing piece. If just the way we treat diabetic patients with insulin, if infection develops because interferon alpha or interferon gamma or GCSF or whatever interleukin is missing or altered, well, we should treat the infection not only with antibiotics or an antiviral agent, but also with the corresponding missing interferon or interleukin. And in that way, infectious diseases will be better controlled. This is, I think, an important clinical implication. But we know there's already proof of principle. From the late 80s, we know we treat patients lacking neutrophils with GCSF. That was a big success of the biotech and pharmaceutical companies. Treating children lacking neutrophils with GCSF cures them, whereas antibiotics, just delay the development of infections.
Now, I understand that as part of your research program at the Rockefeller University Hospital and the Center for Clinical and Translational Sciences, you plan to recruit children from around the globe who are selectively predisposed to developing infectious diseases. What do you hope to learn by studying the immune systems of these children?
Well, by studying the immune system of these children, we intend to understand the genetic basis of their infectious diseases, and therefore to provide the families with genetic counseling and the children with a better treatment based on restoring a normal immune function. But we also aim to better understand how the immune system works, and in particular how it works in natural ecosystem governed by natural selection. And that's the terrific advantage of human genetics, of the human model, if you like. We can define the function of host defense genes, and actually of any genes, in a natural ecosystem governed by natural selection. That is a plus when compared with the experimental models.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.